I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, a very melty Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our equally melty Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you this week to patrons including Jeff Evans, Adam McCauley, Gavin Driver and David Morris, who support us directly. And for just the price of maybe a cup of coffee once or twice a month, you can join them and get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen and chat with us as we record live, and get our Patreon-exclusive show Extra Message. Find out more, patreon.com/UKTech. Ian usurped my intro ever so slightly by talking about how much he's melting. I'll be honest, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, between Ian and I, we're basically naked. Because Ian doesn't have any trousers on, and I don't have a shirt on. I only am wearing shorts on the bottom half. So between us, you've got one clothed podcaster and one naked podcaster. And this is the answer to the question when somebody asks me, what's the difference between the work you do with Bloomberg and the work you do on Text Message? The difference is that I can do the podcast naked. It's really hard to do Bloomberg television without clothes on.
No judgment.
I have done it in shorts.
Well, if people can't see your legs, what does it matter?
Exactly.
What does it matter anyway? I mean, we're all humans. We've all got the same legs.
If you're talking about movements in the stock market and, you know, recent mergers and M&A decisions, if you're wearing shorts, just takes away some of the majesty of your experience. And
I strongly disagree with that. If you did that same information in shorts and the same information in trousers, the information is the same.
Mm-hmm. And yet, since starting that sentence and now, I have felt sweat emerge from another part of my body, so we must progress lest we melt before ending the show. I want to start off by talking about something the Register wrote this week. BT, it's going to wind down its 3G connectivity, by 2023, as it looks that, it basically wants to increase its 4G and 5G coverage across most of the UK entirely by 2028. That's 7 years from now to get full 4G coverage across the UK. 7 years from now. The lack of 3G, though, shouldn't be much of a pain, Elridge said, because most people will have a 4G or 5G capable handset by this point. Actually, BT said that in March, only 2% of data traffic over the EE network, which BT owns, was done over 3G. Only 2%. Everything else data-wise is 4G or 5G. So it's less likely to impact as many people as you might think. But nonetheless, the 2% who are using it, given they are the biggest network in the country, that's still going to be a sizable number of people who are going to have to now think about alternatives, at least by 2023. We've got a quote here from, who said this? I think this is just BT Corporate. It says, quote, as part of efforts to ensure all customers can benefit from the most reliable connection, 3G services will be retired with customers across BT brands phased off 3G by 2023. This will affect EE, BT Mobile and PlusNet. PlusNet Mobile. BT also said it's going to retire 2G, which still exists, by the end of the decade. That's according to Reuters in a separate story.
Yeah.
So if you are one of the people who has a 2G or 3G handset, you might want to consider upgrading.
I was on 5G. I popped into town yesterday for a beverage, and I was on 5G with 3. This is how stark the difference between 3 5G and 3 normal is. I did a speed test at 922 megabits per second down.
Wow.
922. I'll pop that in the Discord. Absolutely incredible. A 12 Pro, yeah.
That's faster than I've got on EE. I stood it's next madness, to St. Paul's where they have some of the fastest 5G. In fact, that's where they were when 5G launched on EE a couple of years back. That's where they were taking journalists to trial it, 'cause it was where it was fastest. And it's right next to my office. So I stood there and I get something like 600-700 down. I've never had it as high as 922 meg down. That's pretty impressive. And that's unlimited, isn't it? Unlimited data.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And a decent upload.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, by current standards.
Ping's not so good. I mean,
that's not bad. It's a 34 millisecond ping. That's not great.
You couldn't, that would be a painful gaming experience. Maybe. But
depends
speeds,
on the game.
I mean, that is unbelievably quick for £20 a month. Like if you were on that as a, you know, just if that was, if you could get that at home, you wouldn't need home broadband unless you were a gamer.
John in the chat says right now that he has a 3 5G hub as his home broadband now, and I believe Richard Taylor, longtime patron Richard, is a 3 business customer and runs a huge amount of data volumes over that. So it can be done. It's good to see 3 up its game a bit, because 3 was, for want of a better term, a bag of cack for quite a long time if you were in a densely populated city. Now, Nick makes a good point here about 3G bandwidth. He says if 3G bandwidth was the same as 4G, then it would be more than 2%. So it's a spurious argument. And that's a very fair point. However, I still think 2%, given the pervasiveness of 3G in general, like that's still a pretty tiny number to have these days. Because, I mean, every now and again, I fall back on 3G, even on EE.
Yeah.
Falls back on 3G just because, you know, the penetration is so much better if you're in dense buildings or in the middle of nowhere.
Interesting that John's screenshot has much better ping. I'm assuming, John, that's because you're paying for a specific home broadband contract, are you? Because that is actually remarkably, that's half. I mean, obviously, the different things affect latency. Like, it could have been, I could have been a far, you know, far away from the tower or something like that. But it's interesting that there's a half saving on ping. Anyway, but then on 3, you have the other thing where you'll be out having a nice time and you'll be on 3G and it'll be unusable. So it's, you can't rely on it.
This was an issue when we had some very large, I believe they were protests in the city, and I was getting I was on a bus going through Oxford Circus, which is I think the busiest shopping street in the whole of Europe. And there was also not only that, but it was a hot day and there were protests going on, and I could not for love nor money have a usable data experience on 4G. This is going back maybe 4 or 5 years. And I dropped it down to 3G and had a brilliant experience because everyone's phone defaults to 4G. And actually having that 3G fallback, if all you're trying to do is send some messages and maybe a photo, is perfectly fine. And that will be a bit of a shame to not have that option. But I guess now we've got 5G and 4G, it's less problematic.
Yeah, well, 3G is not bad, actually. You know, like in terms of its maximum speed, it's more than capable. It's just, I guess, that, you know, well, it's had its day, hasn't it?
I mean, 2G still being around is utilized by a lot of people. It's used by emergency services, I believe. In Japan, NTT Docomo, one of the biggest networks out there, they actually killed 2G in 2011. 10 years ago, they got rid of 2G.
Yeah.
I think Singapore have already shut it down. Quite a while back. There's a few places that have completely got rid of it. And I want to say that we talked about Vodafone doing this a year or so ago. I'm sure Vodafone said it was going to switch off its 3G within the next couple of years, and that was maybe 2 years ago, which, so it must be around that time if they're still on port. I've just Googled it and I didn't find our episode, but I did find a blog post here from ISP Review, regular appearance on this podcast in recent weeks, from June 2019. So my timing is about right. There's a quote here from Andrea Doner, head of Vodafone's UK mobile network. quote, 2G will have a longer lifetime, a longer role to play, especially when it comes to the Internet of Things, where you don't actually need speed, you need capacity. So you don't need capacity, you just need it to be ticking away in the background with low power. It doesn't make sense economically to go out and change all these devices. So that is interesting. That would explain at least why elements of 2G is going to stick around for a while, even possibly outliving 3G. Well, if you are one of the people who is on a poxy old 3G phone, or maybe you're one of the bright sparks who bought one of those Nokia devices that doesn't have 4G or 3G, which I sounded like I was disparaging those people. I was one of those people that was tempted to move to one of those devices because I liked the idea of fewer distractions in my pocket. Never did, but I considered it, and I believe that that's half the battle. But maybe you did, and now you're faced with potentially not having any mobile service. Whatever your...
Or moving to a different network.
That's true. You could just do that. Whatever your dilemma, though, let us know. Thoughts you have on the story, UK Tech Show at iCloud.com. Ian.
Nate.
Are you a massive racist?
No, I like to think I'm not.
Then good news, you can still go and see football matches.
Oh, wow. what a treat.
I know this is a huge relief to you. Ian and I have a shared disdain for ball sports of all breeds. Ian more so than me, because I did at least watch.
I don't mind rugby, that's the thing.
That's the one with the ball that's shaped like Stewie Griffin's head, isn't it?
That's correct, yes.
I see, yes. I believe they have good thighs, those gentlemen.
They certainly do.
Yeah. Can't vouch for it, but the ones I've seen, they look like bloody tree trunks. Anyway, the news here is that obviously there's been an awful lot of discussion in the news this week following the Italy-England game about the pervasiveness of online racism aimed at black players in the England club. And the BBC wrote this week that the government has promised to ban people who abuse footballers online from stadiums for up to a decade. And this is in the same way as, quote, violent thugs. Boris Johnson said football banning orders, FBOs, would be amended to allow this, specifically in response to the abuse that was hurled at three of the players after the recent final, that's going to allow for these bans to be implemented, and that tech firms specifically would be fined if they failed to stop vile behaviour. Boris's comments follow several England players being abused following the final, as we said. But also, according to the BBC, Labour leader Keir Starmer said the PM's word rang, quote, hollow, which is, of course, what you would expect the leader of the opposition to say.
Pretty much, Boris
said, we are working closely with with football and police authorities to ensure we can track and take action against online abusers, and will ban them from football grounds in the same way would they have committed these offences on our streets. Now, it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that Ian and I wholeheartedly oppose any abuse of this kind. It is abhorrent behaviour, and anyone who does it should be ashamed of themselves. And frankly, I was listening to a short podcast recently about the old English practice of hanging, drawing and quartering people, whereby a gentleman, and it was a gentleman because women generally were burnt at stakes, gentlemen were hung, cut down just before they died, had their male member removed and burnt in front of them, and then had were then disemboweled and dragged through a city. Now, I think that would be a fitting punishment for people that don't out racism and try and hide behind the guise of an online account. Some might say that's extreme. Personally, I think it's probably justified.
It is a touch on the draconian, but yeah, you know, it's probably what they deserve.
I mean, all this pussyfooting around, it's not making anyone any better, is it? We still get idiots online. We still have people being racist for no reason. We still have idiots who are allowed to spout their opinions. And unlike yours and mine, Ian, most of their opinions, from what I've observed, are wrong and terrible. So it's clearly something more needs to be done. We've seen evidence that trying to get tech companies to do the right thing doesn't work. And government, I do believe that they mean well, but will probably have very little effect on this. So hang drawing and quartering.
Fair enough. You've exhausted all the other options. That makes sense.
I believe there are no other options. But what do you think? I mean, seriously, I'm making light of it because, you know, there is an element of needing to make light of the ineffectual measures being proposed here. But I also genuinely don't know how this could be enforced and put in place, even with the best of intentions.
It's a difficult problem to solve, right? Because fundamentally, there will always be people who are racist. Like they've been raised that way. It's going to be almost impossible to re-educate them, I would say. I mean, it might work for some, probably won't work for most. So if we accept the fact that there will for at least now be racists, then the only real thing we can do is we can't, you know, take away their right to think racist thoughts. I mean, I guess they have that right. So instead, we have to just make sure they can't share them. Or that they understand that if they do share them, that there are repercussions for that. I'm all for making sure that they can't go to football matches. That seems like a good punishment for people who claim to be sports fans. Although, obviously, many have claimed that they're not real sports fans if they're going to do that. I mean, I just fundamentally disagree with that. Football has had more than its share of problems over the years. I guess because it's permitted to some extent. So we need to make sure that everyone's knows that you can't get away with it anymore. And banning people seems like one solution. I don't know how I feel about, making things difficult for tech companies, because ultimately it's very challenging. And I think one of the big problems with it is that normal people, you know, decent people who are outraged, need to stop drawing attention to the fact that there are racists out there. I think one of the worst things you can do. We're talking about this. Someone tweeted something that sparked off a thought in my mind, and it was that was it. So someone put up explained in a video that if you make a spelling mistake in a video, you get a lot of comments underneath the video correcting the spelling mistake. And that means that YouTube looks at that video and says, this video is very popular, but lots of people are very engaged with this video. I'll show this video to more people. And the more people you show it to, the more people correct the spelling, and so on and so on. The algorithm is too stupid to understand what's going on. So therefore, it just amplifies things. The same is true on all social media platforms. If something gets traction for whatever reason, then it will be amplified. So I think people need to note racism online, report in the appropriate manner, and then absolutely not draw attention to it. Because realistically, that's the only way we can do it. If people are going on Twitter and being racist, they're doing it to get an audience. We need to make it near impossible for them to get that audience. Do what you have to do. I'm not going to tell people what to do, but I'm telling you that the way the algorithm works, you're not helping if you're retweeting stuff from racists and calling them out on it. Just report it and let Twitter do their thing. My experience with Twitter particularly is they're quite good. Like, if you report something and they look at it, and they will remove it. I do a lot of reporting on Twitter. I'm not a lot of talking about it. So when I see something I think is outright racist, I will absolutely call it out, but not usually publicly. So that's my advice. I don't think people are going to learn from it. Everything is just so toxic these days that, you know, if we just left it alone, those people would go like, no one agrees with me. I'll just go back to my hole. Because that's what I do when I've got, you know, I have plenty of opinions and I put them on Twitter. I get absolutely no engagement with most of them. So therefore, I'm just like, no one cares. Off I go.
So, I mean, I'm with you. And I don't, as far as this proposal to ban, I don't see how it will work en masse in the same way that a violent thug would be treated, because the violence taking place in person results in an arrest, and it's much easier to ban somebody when you physically apprehended them and you have their photo and you have their fingerprints or what have you. Online, at least one arrest has been made. I was editing some of this our coverage of this at Bloomberg actually this week, and we covered that an arrest has been made, but one arrest, and there were thousands of messages targeted at these players.
Yeah, there were.
Several studies have been done historically as well that said it's not a new thing, and that one of the problems is emoji. And it's known that racist messages are often tinged with the use of the monkey and banana emoji. And there's an argument that context and contextual analysis isn't good enough because it should be able to detect the juxtaposition of certain words with certain emoji.
I think they could do
emoji.
More for sure. For definite, they
because you can sending a monkey emoji as a thing. A lot of people send monkey emojis. You know, that little one with the monkey with its hands over its mouth, or what have you. Like, that is not a racist emoji by itself. However, used in context with certain other words and aimed at certain accounts, let's say, then it's that collection, that juxtaposition of words and emoji that where the racism stands, and it feels to me, certainly as an observer, like it's something these companies could do better. And I just don't understand it, because if you look at how they responded to disinformation and misinformation around coronavirus, if you post something about a virus, whether it is accurate and scientifically sound or whether it is scaremongering and fictitious in nature, your post on certain platforms will result in a little banner that just says, you know, get the latest information about COVID-19 or what have you from whatever sources. And that's, you know, seen by a lot of people as being a reasonable response without curtailing people's freedom of speech, even if they are idiots. So it just doesn't, to me, seem like rocket science to be able to detect certain juxtapositions of words, emoji, things like this. And yet, even though this is not a new issue, it's still a prevalent problem that can provoke the response from politicians. As those intentions are, but ineffectual as they're likely to be.
And why not use that sort of thing that you just talked about, you know, that where you detect the content of a message and just hide it a bit? So people think they're still tweeting their nonsense, but actually, in reality, that they're not being seen by people. It seems to me like one particular solution. I guess it's kind of a shadow ban, but on a per tweet basis.
Nick in our live chat says, as well as hung, drawn, quartering in the old days, criminals were paraded through the streets. Some good old ritual humiliation. I'm for that. I'm for that. It's like that scene in Game of Thrones, isn't it? Shame.
Yes, shame. Very much so.
I've seen the scene. I actually don't know what it is because I don't like Game of Thrones, but I have seen that scene and it looked pretty embarrassing. Although yes, I have a feeling she may have slept with a relative. But
they're all sleeping with relatives, Nate. That's the entire point of the show.
Now, Ian, in our live chat, that is to differentiate from the Ian who is chatting live on this show, says, racism aside, I'm old enough to remember Southgate getting abused from missing a penalty in 1996. This is more about people being plain nasty and dickheads. I agree. Now, I mean, I remember watching that final in 96 as well.
What?
At home in Wickersley. Yeah, I watched the year in 96. I was gutted when Southgate missed, which is why he was such a good person to have on the pitch when this happened this year.
Yeah.
He, you know, of all the people that knows what it's like to miss a penalty in a final, it's him.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
But it's different now, because now it's so much easier to hide behind an identity online, which makes it even harder to hold you accountable, whether that is to be dismembered or paraded in public.
You can have a nasty message in their inbox before they've even got off the pitch. So, yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah. So I hope we can get on top of it. And I do respect any move to make that happen, but holding the tech companies accountable, that is going to be very, very, very difficult.
Wow, we should just shut Facebook. Let's do that.
Well, that's a conversation for another day. I'm not entirely in favour of that.
I am.
As a move. I don't think Facebook's... I mean, all right, well, we'll go into it ever so slightly. The problem is that the issue is humanity, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. But if they didn't have Facebook, then humanity would be restricted to people actually going to see each other, and then people tend to abide by these societal norms. So if we get rid of Facebook, then they'll have no choice but to just be civilized human beings again, like they used to be, even if they're only pretending.
When I was in school, if I was being a little shit, which happened a lot, in primary school, if you were bad, you got sent to the corridor, capital T, capital C. And the corridor was the central thoroughfare, if you like, through which all pupils and teachers must walk. And it was also where the head teachers, headmasters, as it was when I was there, office was, and also the staff room. And if you were sent to the corridor, you had to stand there, and everyone knew you had been bad. Everyone would look at you, and the teachers would have to walk past you, and you would have to explain every single time what you'd done wrong and how you were going to make amends for it.
Shame.
Full on shame. And I tell you what, it worked. I mean, not well enough for it to not be necessary to use it, but man, if you were sent there once, you'd feel that for a while, and you'd behave.
When so I was at primary school, the threat was that you'd be sent to the headmaster for a slipper. Now, none of us really think that the head teacher at that school had ever administered the slipper, but the threat of it was enough to keep most people in line.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a good thing, because ultimately it's a threat of physical violence, which is unproductive, I feel. But it did work, mostly. I mean, I was still naughty. And I also got caught up in other people's naughtiness as well. I remember one time when someone called Greg pulled all the, the fluffy insulation that you get around, you know, doors, like the sort of, I guess it's fiberglass or something like that, or, you know, like little fibers that keeps the wind out. But he'd pulled out a load of that from round a door and sort of set it off into the wind. And I was there. I'd watched him do it, but I hadn't taken part in any way. And he got me hauled to the headmaster's office for that. That was a slippering threat right there. But I didn't get the slipper.
The threat has to be believable. It has to be real. This is why, you know, if you arrest enough people, then it will have a knock-on effect. People, they see action being taken. When they see no action being taken and no repercussion, it indirectly encourages them to carry on because there's no real risk of being caught. It's when people stop caring about the outcomes and the potential fallout that they're emboldened to carry on and go to greater extremes. But we're getting a little bit philosophical, which is something I deeply love talking about, but not on this show.
Yeah, well, it would be nice if we could solve it, because let's be honest, I might not like football, but even I can see that that was one hell of a team who is made up of some of the country's nicest people with, you know, brilliant ideas about how to make society better for everyone. And not only that, they played extremely well by everyone's metric who understands the sport. So really, you know, any sort of abuse of any kind is just stupid. And, you know, the fact that we've regressed to this racist nation is beyond despicable. But I would like it dealt with. Make it happen.
Well, if you have an opinion on how to tackle this problem, we welcome serious responses, of course. It's not always about hanging, drawing and quartering people. There are probably more effective ways of dealing with the problem, but you can let us know your views on the matter. UKTechShow@iCloud.com, and well done to the England team, because much as I don't care about football, those lads did bloody well. Well, if you want to hear what the heat does to a professional podcaster when it becomes hard to differentiate between what is sweat and what is remaining human body, you'll want to listen to the extended version of this show this week. We just had a fascinating discussion for the last 10 minutes about the new Steam Deck, Valve's entry into portable gaming. I believe we had some unique insights in there, Ian. I'm very proud of your contribution. You should feel very good about yourself. It was a tremendous exchange.
I tell you what I feel. Hot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. As was evidenced by my segue out of that section,
yes.
Which was, to use the broadcasting term, terrible.
I don't know, that was quite a long time ago.
Nonetheless, that's out of you. If you want to listen to the extended version of the show, patreon.com/UK Tech. Someone who is far better than me at doing professional links from section to section is Mr. Tom Merritt, our good friend and brother from another mother in the podcast world. Here's what he's been talking about on Daily Tech News Show this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, I have a theory about why Netflix getting into gaming is not the most important takeaway from the news that Netflix is getting into gaming. Also, our thoughts on Windows 365, Microsoft launching Windows as a service for real, why Apple did not ban the number 69 from its weather app, the importance of Black Widow's success at the theaters and online, and Darren Kitchen tells us about all the tech he uses to live a fully digital life from his van out on the road. All that and more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
No overlap.
This week. It's real talent is what that is.
Yeah. And, yeah, Windows 365. I was sorely tempted to talk about that because you were writing about that on T3 as well, weren't you?
Yeah.
I'm getting a demo of that, I believe, soon.
I'm not that impressed, I've got to say. It seems quite expensive.
I know they
haven't officially announced pricing, but there was some stuff that they did say, and it had pricing on it, and it's like $35 a month, which I guess
think we have to be careful because it's... I think what we know of was business... like volume licensing pricing, not necessarily consumer-facing pricing.
I mean,
it's not been officially announced.
Well, and also, it could include Office subscription as well. So, like, that would probably make it worthwhile if it was an all-in package. You know, they could make it... I tell you what, they could make it really powerful. You know, they could throw in an Xbox gaming streaming thing. If they could do all sorts of packages for people and provide a real change in how people view... computing, maybe.
Well, you know what? This is why you should listen to Daily Tech News Show, because they talked about this in depth. And one of the comments that was made on the show, I forget by whom, was essentially this is the culmination of Satya Nadella's mission at Microsoft, is to essentially move Windows into the cloud, into a subscription unit, and get everyone paying a subscription and just accessing all the Microsoft stuff that they want. Complete wholesale shift from how it used to be. But anyway, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, once we find out the consumer angle on what Microsoft is doing with its cloud-based products. That's the reason we didn't talk about it on this week's show. But we'll get to that in good time. In the meantime, DailyTechNewsShow.com. That's where you can hear about it. Ian, just to extend the entry to the show we had about the sweating bodies, I am dripping. So I'm going to go away.
I'm going to bring out my pants.
The air conditioner.
Which are...
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you are well sunscreened and enjoying the heat to whatever temperature it is where you are. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back, all being well, next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.